Hi, everybody. My name is Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me okay? My sobriety date is January 3rd, 1975, and my current home group is the High Noon at Lake Mary, Florida. Thanks, Mom. Yeah. Well, the topic is daily inventory, but before I jump right into that, I'm going to give you a little background on how I got here. And I started drinking at an early age, and I became a daily drinker, and I had a lot of problems with alcohol right from the beginning. And what got me in here was I had just received a DWI. It was my fourth, and I was looking at some heavy consequences. And I didn't know what I was going to do to get out of this time. And you know how we talk about these little Eskimos that show up in AA? Well, I had this guy show up, and he said, Bob, he said, it looks like you're in serious trouble this time. He said, I think the court's going to put you away for a period of time. And he said, maybe if you show them you're trying to do something about your drinking problem, they'll have a little mercy on you. And I said, what problem? I just drink, that's not a big deal. And he said, I'm not saying you have a problem, but he said, I think if you hide out in AA for a while, it'll be to your benefit. And I said, wow, So the wind-up of that was I ended up in the alcoholic unit of the state hospital in Rochester, New York, for 28 days. And when I came out, I stayed there for the 28 days, and in my mind, when I went in, I was a heavy daily drinker. And for not drinking those 28 days, I came out, I was an alcoholic. And I was pissed, And I said, wow, what am I going to do with this? And when they released me, I had that exit interview or whatever you call it. You talk with the doctor in charge there, and it was a woman. And she was an alcoholic. In fact, all the counselors, all the people that worked there were recovering alcoholics. And she said, Bob, she said, if you really don't want to drink, she said, of all the people that stay sober, 98% of them go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and 2% can do it through religion. And she said, to be honest with you, I don't think you have a very good shot at the religious aspect, so I suggest you go to AA. And so I had this DWI. I knew I was going to end up in court. And this Eskimo, Vinny, became my first sponsor. Those early 12-steppers, they were slick. They'd get you to do things that you didn't even realize what you were doing, And he said, so he got me going to these AA meetings. He said, I don't even know if you're an alcoholic, but we'll figure this out as we go along. But I knew I was an alcoholic when I came out of the treatment center. I think the only thing I really learned in there was I believe the progression of the disease, because I saw all kinds of things happen in there and suicide. And I knew if I drank again, I was going to be in big trouble. So I came out, and he introduced me to AA. And I started going to meetings with him. And he said, Bob, he said, if you really want to stay sober, you have to change a few things about yourself. I thought, well, really? What? And he said, well, everything. I said, well, Jesus, that doesn't sound that easy, And he said, we have these 12 steps of sobriety. And he said, the good news is they're only suggested steps. He said, they used to say suggested steps on the tops. He said, but the bad news is these are the only suggestions we have, So I said, well, okay. So I came in, and, I really, to be honest with you, I didn't like AA in the beginning. I felt better after I left the meetings, all pumped up, ready to come back, and it'd be time to go the next day, and I didn't want to go, but I didn't want to drink either. I guess I did have the desire not to drink. And I would go to meetings, and after the meetings, we'd go out for coffee with my sponsor, and we'd talk about my day, I'd whine, he'd listen, and we'd be out till 2, 3 in the morning. It was worse than drinking, for God's sakes. I'd be out all night, and then I'd have to get up and go to work. And on. But, you know, my life did get better quite rapidly because, you know, being a daily drinker, I honestly didn't know if alcohol was the problem in my life because I never had any periods of time of sobriety where, you know, I had the good things. It was always bad. And without the drinking, my life got better quite rapidly. And like I said, we kept on going to meetings, and he worked me through the steps, and I made the decision, and I had trouble with the spiritual, and, you know, I resisted everything, I think, really, in the beginning. And, you know, I thought this, I didn't know what we were getting into with, you know, they kept on telling me it's a spiritual program, and I don't know, I thought you were going to brainwash me, it was a cult or something you were going to get me in, and, you know, and he said, you know, talking about the spiritual side of AA is like talking about the wet side of the ocean. You know, it is the program. And, Bob, you have to grasp it. And I don't know. It took me a long time to get down on my knees and ask for help. But like I said, he guided me through the steps. I got to the fourth step. I did the personal inventory, and then we talked about it in the fifth. And I worked my way along and got up to the ninth, you know, where you continue to take personal inventory and when you were wrong, properly admit it, or the 10th step, I meant. And, you know, Vinny used to say, Bobby said, you forget easy. He said, you got to get your mind going on a spiritual direction. In the morning, he said, read a daily refraction or the 24-hour book. I read that little black 24-hour book, the Hazelton one. I know it's not approved literature, but they haven't thrown me out yet. I've been doing it for, you know, 40 years, and so I read that every day, and that gets my mind going in the guide thing, and I could kind of meditate as to, you know, I was more or less asking God to help me. I was very specific, mostly in the beginning, you know, that God's will do thy will. That hadn't really entered the picture. It was all about me, you know, and that's why I think I couldn't get down to my knees for a long time in the program, because I had no humility at all. I thought, God, if God is God, why do I have to get down on my knees and ask you for help? Just read my mind and find out what I need and bestow it on me. You know, I don't need all this, you know, begging for help. I'm not going to beg, you know. And like I say, it took a long time, and it took a lot of white-knuckle sobriety to wear me down, to get to where I got to be a little receptive. And, you know, I talk about the character defects, the selfishness, and the resentments. Oh, I was great at resentments, you know, and I'd hang on to those forever. And the honesty came, the self-honesty came fairly good. You know, I couldn't lie to myself quite as much as I was. But, you know, it's a long, long process. It was for me. It was a long, slow process. And like I say, with the religious aspect, or not religious, the spiritual, I tried to grasp it. I knew I had to get that if I was going to stay sober. And it just was, I went church shopping. I went to all different churches trying to understand God, understand what's going on. I got saved, I got this and that, and, you know, nothing was ever different for me. I believed in God, but I think that I thought I wasn't worthy of having him in my life. And I used to attend this, we called it the workshop in downtown Rochester. It was an inner city, and I used to hang out there because I identified more with the people with early sobriety than I did with the people with 100 years that were talking about all this serenity and happiness that was going through their lives. I didn't identify with that. But we had one guy there, we used to call him Doc. And he would ramble on and on. I had no idea what the hell he was talking about. And, you know, he'd be talking, and I'd get up, and I'd go to the bathroom, and I'd come back and get some coffee, and he'd still be talking. You know, I thought, Jesus, you know. Okay, let's end this. But one day he said, you know, when you are spiritually ready, God will reveal to you in a very special way that he is there, and, you know, and there is a God. And, you know, that finally did happen to me. It wasn't any flash of lightning or whatever. It was just one of those aha moments where I was by myself and I was doing something, and all of a sudden, you know, it was like there was a realization that there was a God. And he was on my side. And boy, what a difference that made to me. And I was able to get down on my knees and ask God for help. And my life, boy, it was getting pretty good up to that point. But now it really took off, you know. I thought, why didn't I do this, you know, about 3 years ago? You know, geez, my life changed so much. But, you know, and then I got a little bit crazy because, you know, you get God in your corner, you can do anything. You know, you can jump off high buildings. And bought a motorcycle. I couldn't keep four wheels under me when I was drinking. And here I am on a motorcycle going cross-country up through Yellowstone and Trans-Canada and back. And that was the most spiritual thing that ever happened to me in all my sobriety. It was like God was riding right with me and showing me where to go and how to do it. And went through a tornado, and a lot of things happened there. But, you know, getting back towards the inventory part, I got so... Vinny, my first sponsor, he said, Bobby, he said, you have to try to be a better person on a daily basis. And he said, also, he said, you're an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. What kind of example are you? I thought, wow, you know. And so, you know, I asked myself that a lot during the day. Bob, you know, you're trying to be a better person on a daily basis, and what kind of an example of AA are you? In the beginning, I didn't want anybody to know I was an AA. You know, I was a closet AA-er. You know, at work, they knew me when I was drunk, flopping around on the sidewalk, and then I got sober and I wanted to hide it from everybody. You know, it's like they didn't know. I disappeared for 30 days and came back, and I wasn't drinking. You know, they thought I went on a retreat or something, I guess, but that didn't fit my personality either. So, you know, I keep on, you know, the thing is, with patience, one of my character defects, man, I still don't have any patience. And, you know, a lot of our character defects we learn how to deal with time. It's just not that you get better, but they don't evaporate. And some of them, I don't, like I don't go out and stand in long lines in my free time to, you know, get patience. It's just, it's crazy, you know. It's like when we eat in these places across here, you know, I don't eat what I want to eat. I eat the one with the shortest line, you know. That's, you know, but that's, you know, I deal with it. And the anger, and the anger, I was never really an angry person because I was a barroom drinker and I was a horrible fighter. So therefore, you know, but I had a smart mouth too, and that got me in a lot of trouble. It was a good thing I hung around with guys that protected me, you know. But I'm always looking for that easier, softer way, and, they say that you have to have daily contact with another alcoholic. And I've been talking to my sponsor pretty much every day, you know, and that was going to be a drag, you know. And so I thought, I'll marry an alcoholic. And that's what I did. I married my wife, Karen. She's out there in the audience. It'll be 35 years pretty quick. Best thing that ever happened to me, you know. A little keynote here. If you want to hear her, she's speaking tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock on sex. So if you want to go to B1 over there, you know, and hear the real talk. But anyway, you know, the character defects, I think, you know, after you get that spiritual connection that they talk about in the big book, and also, you know, the desire to drink had left me pretty much. Once in a while, I get it, even after years of sobriety. I get a drunk dream once in a while, and it does scare you. Mine's the same every time. I don't even get drunk. I have about three drinks, and I get arrested for DWI, and I'm right back where I started. You know, it's like a carbon copy of my start. But getting back to the inventory, you know, like I say, be a better person on a daily basis, and you know, you have to give back to the program. Being selfish, you know, I didn't want to give everything. And then my sponsor said, you got to get into service work. So we started going to the hospitals and this and that. And he said, Bobby said, I think you ought to get on the prison committee and go up to Attica. He said, maybe you could get a little gratitude where you almost ended up. So I got signed up, and we used to go up to Attica on Sundays. And I'll tell you, that wasn't a pretty place in the 1970s, you know. And I'm forever grateful that I didn't end up there. And, you know, all these little things that, you know, changed my life so much and made me appreciate Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, before I used to give to get, not like an AA, you have to give it away to get it. When I was searching for my religion here, I got involved with Oral Roberts. And, you know, he does have a connection up there because I'll tell you, I moved a lot in early sobriety. And every place I moved to, I'd come home and I'd find that envelope in my mailbox. Send me money, you know. He had the mainstream to the thing. But anyway, he used to preach this, give to get. And so one day I came home, I was working afternoons, I was getting ready to go to work, and I had just gone to the bank. I didn't have much money, and okay, it's like a pastor here. And I'm getting ready to go to the bank. I made this deposit to pay my life insurance policy that I owed. And I came home, and I had this letter from Oral Roberts. And it says, send money. And I said, oh, Jesus, you know. What do I do? Do I send him money or do I pay my life insurance? The windup was, I sent a check to Oral Roberts. And I got to work, and I'd won the baseball pool. And I said, wow, this works. You know, this give to get. I love this, you know. And that was still, that was part of my spiritual thing. And I'm getting near the bottom of the hour here. So, you know, I get up in the morning. I ask for help. I ask God to do his will and help me help another alcoholic during the day and get me through problems. And I've learned not to react. You know, they teach you that 10-second rule in the beginning, you know. When somebody says something, it takes 10 seconds to respond, and I try to do that. I don't wait 10 seconds anymore because I'm old. They think I'm nodded off, you know, that they forgot what the question was. But, you know, all these things. And, you know, I can laugh at my sobriety now, which is one thing I could never do in the beginning when I came in. I was wound so tight, and everything was a crisis. And just one more little tidbit. I remember my sponsor told me, he said, Bob, he said, I think you have half a shot at this program, because I was in crisis and everything in the beginning. He says, you know, you're finally able to distinguish the difference between a crisis and an event. And as I look back, I've had a lot of events in Alcoholics Anonymous and not really many crises. I've had a lot of tragedies, but, you know, nothing has really been that bad that I couldn't get through with the strength of you people in the program and talking to another alcoholic. And thank you for listening to me.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that, Bob. And now we'll have Miss Kitty, Ohio.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kitty, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm pretty sure you can hear me. I live in Columbus, Ohio. I got sober in Vermont, Middlebury, Vermont. My home group is the After Work Group in Gahanna, Ohio. Some of my home group members are here today, which is great. We all flew, some of us flew here on a plane to get here yesterday. Actually, my days are running together, so I'm not quite sure, but I think I arrived yesterday. Needless to say, I've been thinking about inventory, but when I was asked to do this, I love the inventory. I'm one of those people that, you know, my best subject was me when I was drinking. And so I've had a lot of opportunity to think about myself, and now I get to do it in a more constructive way. From my earliest time in Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor, when I would talk about something that troubled me, she'd say, well, you know, let's save that, and we'll look at that a little more when you get to your fourth step. And that was really handy because I felt like I'd been heard. I also felt like there was a place that the step would apply to it, and that's what we did. So another thing that happened along that time was that she would, if something would happen at work, and I would be irritated with somebody at work, there was this woman named Pam, you know who you are, and I was doing some jewelry displays, and she didn't do them, you know, as well as I did. So it was a topic that I had with my sponsor. And so I would call her and say, you know, this Pam is an idiot. And she would remind me that Pam had every right to do the jewelry cases in any way that she wanted. I didn't own the company. I wasn't Pam's boss. And that I needed to call Pam tonight and tell her I was sorry. And so she had me doing that long before I had any skill in saying that I was sorry. But, you know, I got to see And before I ever, and I would say, well, I'm not really sorry. And she'd say, well, why don't you make the phone call and you'll see how you feel. So what ended up happening with that was by the time the phone call was made, and she would say, ask the higher power for what you're going to say when you make the phone call. My sponsor would sometimes give me what her words would be, but she said that she wanted me to just trust what the higher power would have me say. And so I would say things to Pam, because I called Pam more than one evening. I would say things to Pam like, you know, I'm really sorry I shouldn't have had that tone with you, or I'm really sorry. The display turned out really well, and, you know, it looks like it's a success. So those sorts of things started me out in a way that I had to look at myself differently. Sometimes when I'm trying to understand a step, I use that thing that I was taught when I got here about going to the step before. So when I think about inventory, I think about what it was like before I had the inventory process in my life. And the inventory process, you know, a non-inventoried person, you can see it in large crowds sometimes. It's been available here for me. I had a really good inventory last night. It was lengthy. You know, I get to see myself in others. I also get to see where I might have done the same thing that the person that was irritating me do. So, one of the things that I do when I do inventory, the start of inventory for me is, there was this man named Don P. where I got sober. When we would have step meetings, he would talk about that sometimes he would forget to do his inventory, so he would need to do it sometimes the next morning. But he said he found out that what worked for him at that time of his sobriety was he'd do it after he came home from work. So he'd do his inventory then, so if he needed to call, or if he needed to call a sponsor, or call the person, or take some other action, he would have the time in that day to do it a day at a time. And I like that. I've tried that. Just like so much of our steps and our great suggestions here, there are different things that I've done at different times in my sobriety. If I forget to do inventory at night for whatever reason, I have a home group that every Tuesday we go out to eat afterwards, and so it's work, home group, we go out to eat, and I get home really late, and it's great fun, and I do sometimes my inventories on Wednesday mornings. But I start out my inventory with some of the words that we use in our book. I can't remember them. I'm not one of those people that remember the words. But I start out with, you know, where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking? And then I usually go into some variety of what it is for me. Have I bullied anybody today? Have I interrupted? Have I thought I was better than someone else? And I go into my own personal things that I learned when I did my sixth step, the things I saw myself in my fourth column in the fourth step. And I had a sponsor that told me great things about character defects that I felt so terrible about myself when I got here. And not only was I, you know, fall down naked drunk in the front yard girl, but I also, my relationships were a mess, and I felt I just had, just didn't feel good about myself at all. My self-esteem was not good. And so she had the good knack, God working through her. What she did was she told me that my character defects were my greatest assets. They were my teachers. And she asked me to think about a teacher that I'd had at some time in my life that had really had an impact on me, and I had one. And she said that these things are not your worst qualities. These are things that you'll get to learn about yourself through yourself, you know, learn about yourself. And that's been really true. So I stopped being at war with my character defects. I was going to not resolved to have them, but I had them, and they weren't bad. They were just qualities that I had. They were things that a day at a time, if I was quiet and I reflected and I listened to God and talked to my sponsor and others about what was coming up for me in my inventory, I would change. And that's been true. It's true every day. I think that what happens for me is that inventory is hopeful. The kind of hope that I had when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I just could not believe that I was not drinking a day at a time. And I started to feel differently. I started to think differently about you. I started to have kind thoughts about you, which was really unusual. And in that, what ended up, I could see that I was changing. I could feel that I was changing. I'm one of the lucky ones. As a non-believer, I had the presence of a loving higher power early. And I'm so grateful for that. And I couldn't understand it. I couldn't articulate it. It was there. And I knew something marvelous was happening. And I saw it happen in you. And I think that that's that great window we get here, is that I see what happens in you. And I know that probably it's happening for me and it's going to continue to happen for me. And I'm really grateful for that. So I think of inventory as not a task. I think of it as something really hopeful that I get to do better a day at a time. I have some little clues. Everybody probably has your own. Usually when I'm whispering idiot under my breath in whatever situation that I'm in, that's a good time for a spot check inventory. I also can feel that little nudge of impatience. You know, we sometimes call it restless, irritable, and discontent, which was, you know, an understatement for what I was like when I got here. But I have that. I'll feel aggressive. Or, you know, I have that know-it-allism. And the things that I exhibit in my life when I'm uncomfortable. And I can feel it rattling around in me now than ever before. But that started early. And the good news is this takes practice for me a day at a time. But the good news is it works. I can ignore that. And I can just exult in thinking you're an idiot. But it doesn't do me any good, because what ends up happening is I always want to get back to that soft underbelly. I want to get back to that place where I'm so grateful that I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm so grateful that you are. I'm so grateful that we're all here. And remembering what's important, and that's what's important for me. Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that's ever happened to me. My sobriety is dear to my heart. With it, I know that the quality of my life would be what it was before, which was not a good quality of life. You know, I have a place now that I can take what's going on, and instead of feeling bad about myself, which is how I used my character defects before, I didn't know what to do. But now when it comes up, it's like that sponsorship joke. The sponsee calls you and she goes, "Oh my golly, racketa, racketa, racketa." She's talking about something going on and you're happy for her. You think, great, you know, it's just wonderful. Because she's going through something. She's being forced to look at something. And I really like that. And I get to do that too. And that's the great equalizer. I go through it, you go through it. The other thing that happens for me in inventory is I'm a big fan of speaking to God in the affirmative. I speak to God because I know that the higher power is always helping me. It's spiritual time is different than regular time, I believe. The fourth dimension is different than the third. And when I'm troubled or I'm turning something wonderful over to my higher power, I say, I know you're watching over me. I know you're helping me. I know you're giving me the words to say. That I know. And I don't ask because I know it's already happening. That works really well. I also know that forgiveness is really good. I had that opportunity with Pam to learn some about forgiveness. I also grew up in a family that I was kind of like being raised like wolves a bit, but we didn't, you know, there was not talk of forgiveness. And you need to be able to say you're sorry to your sponsee and grand sponsees. You need to be able to say you're sorry. I know for me it's been really helpful. I meddled. I was bossy. I shouldn't have gone there. You know, I don't know what their lessons are. If I don't know what mine are, I don't know what theirs are. So that's been really good, and that's been new for me. That's new this year, to find a new place to let somebody just be who they are. Only took me a few years to grow into that, a couple decades, but it's okay. The other thing is about meditation, that I'm a big, I like to meditation. Where I got sober, we called it recreational praying. And so it took the edge off what it was, because I had a lot of other ideas about organized religion, and they said, oh, no, my golly, that's not what we do here. This is something altogether different. And that how the 11th step talks about the sunlit beach, they said that I could apply that also with inventory, that in inventory, what I needed to do was I needed to be quiet. I needed to listen to what the lesson was that was coming. And I also needed to talk to someone else, probably my sponsor, and know what maybe that would be, because I still wasn't good at discerning what the information was that was coming to me. My first sponsor used to say to me, "Do you know what intuition is?" And, you know, I was wise and smart at 36, getting sober. And I said, "Yes, I do." And she said, "Well, I'm your intuition." So she wanted me to run things by her. She wanted me to not count on myself. And that was really good. It was really good in my case. The last part of this for me, I think, is forgiveness, that I need to forgive when somebody's irritated me. Now, I know that sounds really funny, but I think if I have to forgive myself for having the feelings that I'm feeling, still and yet, I remember when I was, 7 years sober, 11 years sober, any time sober before now, what would happen was I'd be really mad at myself if I was exhibiting a character defect that I felt like I was either, it was removed or lessened or I was better at, you know how we can be. And so I think that the last part of it for me is that I need to have forgiveness around it. That seems to work really well. If my feelings get hurt, I say to myself, you know, I don't know what that person's going through. And forgiveness is really good on the end of inventory. So that's what I do, is I try to see what areas do I need to forgive myself or forgive the other person. You know, isn't that awful, forgiving them for who they are? But it helps me to separate from it, and it works for me. So I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for asking me to talk about inventory today. And with that, I'll pass to Jennifer.
We now have Miss Jennifer from California.
Whoa.
And I've got your bottle here. There, I'll set it right on the corner.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. Can everyone hear me? Closer? Oh, yeah. I like that echo. I first like to say I am so self-obsessed. I've just been thinking about myself a lot lately, and especially because I knew that this was coming up, so I really appreciate what everyone else has said. My sobriety date is September 11th, 2006. Well, thank you. I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor. And my home group is the Waterfront Group in San Francisco, California. It meets Sunday nights at 8 o'clock, Fort Mason. All of you should come there and check it out. So sometimes, like, the reason why I brought up that I'm really this echo is really weird. I know that you guys can't hear it, but it's like my voice is reverberating, like, everywhere. Doesn't help with the self-centeredness. So whenever I speak, I try to read the big book and read on step three and the actor running the show. And so my goal, because I know that I'm full of ego and I'm speaking at world, so I was like, I'm going to do all these inventories, and I'm going to get a lot of sleep, and I'm not going to have too much coffee, and I'm going to eat a well-balanced meal, and I'm going to go to a panel and do some service before, like I took someone to another meeting, and I don't know if you've ever been to a YPOG conference, but they're really fun. IckyPod's happening in Miami, September. You should check it out. Anyway, I regressed, but people who go to YPOG conferences tend to drink a lot of energy drinks and don't get any sleep and smoke, like, a ton of cigarettes. And I know that there's YPOG here at World, and it is a world conference, but I've been in the Waipaw area. And so I found myself last night up till 4 in the morning dancing to this awesome DJ over at the hospitality suite and having a lot of coffee and eating like a lot of carbs. Anyway, I woke up at 9:30 and like didn't have time to eat. I didn't do my morning stretches, which is kind of my meditation, and I really don't like crowds. And so I got up to my hotel room because I couldn't find breakfast, and I just started bawling like a little girl, and I'm like, I can't cry. I'm speaking of world. I'm supposed to appear this other way. And just full of ego, you know, and I really care what all of you think about me. Even though I don't know a lot of you, I really care. I'm so self-obsessed. And so anyway, I did an inventory, and it really helped, like it always does every single freaking time. You know, I really think that I'm going to, like, figure it out on my own, and, like, think my way through this resentment or fear or whatever it is. And so I was crying, and I'm, like, worried about my mascara. And anyway, I start, like, talking to myself really calmly, and it really helped, and did the inventory. And then my loving husband brought me some food. It's really lovely. Like, that whole idea of, like, halt, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Like, I'm exhausted. I don't feel lonely, you know. I feel very loved and surrounded by people, although I don't like crowds. I felt really irritated and very hungry, so I just am really different. When I'm hungry, I'm like a raging beast. So everybody watch out. So I just felt like sharing that for some reason. But just to qualify, my dad has 29 years of sobriety, and so I was one of those people. I actually was born and raised here, and my dad would take me to the NAVA club and like put some stuff in front of me, and he would go to meetings. And then at the end of meetings, I would walk around in the chairs and like a cute little girl that I was. And so I was very familiar with 12 steps and with sponsors and big books and everything else. And I remember when I first started drinking at 14, I was like, I'm going to prove that I'm not an alcoholic. You know, because my dad told me that I had six generations of alcoholism and four generations of drug addiction. So I was like, I'm going to prove everybody wrong and try some controlled drinking, which I never did. Because I really don't understand the concept of social drinking. Like, even to this day, like, sometimes I question, you know, I got sober at 19, never had a legal drink, and I think that my dad brainwashed me and I'm not really an alcoholic. But I realize how self-obsessed I am and how I'm constantly thinking. It's like I'm almost like I just hear all these voices in my head, you know, and telling me really different things, and some positive and really egotistical and some really negative. And I forgot where I was going with that, but I was going to prove to people that I'm not an alcoholic. And, oh, yeah, the concept of social drinking, I still don't understand. So sometimes if I get the idea that I'm not really an alcoholic, I think about the idea of how I don't understand just, like, two drinks, you know? And if you're going to have two drinks, they need to be, like, this big, like some gallons of alcohol, because that'll make me feel better. And the idea of when I drink, I don't want to stop. And I want to get completely obliterated because I don't really like what's happening around me and I can't really accept it. So my last drink, I was drinking a drink that I said I was never going to drink anymore because of a bad St. Patty's Day event. And I was sitting next to this guy who had gotten out of rehab, and he was drinking too. And it was 2:00 in the morning, and I found myself screaming "How It Works" at the top of my lungs. And I'd gone, you know, been in and out of AA a little bit. And I was like, oh my God, I can't get away. Maybe my dad was right. Maybe I am an alcoholic. And I had to go through my own experience. Like, so I call myself an alcoholic because I really, once I take that drink, I can't stop. and I will say that I'm going to be somewhere, like fully intending to go, but then I drink, and then something better comes along, or I fail to show up, and I really hurt a lot of people along the way. So I got this sponsor when I came in, and she's no longer my sponsor, but she's a wonderful woman, and she took me through the steps using the 12 and 12 and a little bit of the big book, and it was really helpful. It really worked for me for a really long time. And then the sponsor became more of a friend than a sponsor, and I found myself like arguing with her and not really listening to what she had to say and not really taking any suggestions and then not really calling her. And right around 4 years, I remember this moment where I started to feel not a part of, and it was this meeting called Serenity Seekers on Monday night, and I just, this, like, I've always felt a part of. Like, when I first came in, I was like the AA cheerleader. I was like, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to all these meetings, and I was socializing, and, you know, like, there's a meeting called, or this clubhouse called the Marina Dock, and I was there all the time, because I lost all my friends, and all of them drank, you know, to get obliterated, so being sober, I just didn't really have a purpose to be there, so I, like, wanted to hang out with all these people, and I was like, this is so much fun, I love AA. And then the stuff with the sponsor, and then going to the meeting and not feeling a part of, because I wasn't, you know, working the steps, like maintaining through 10, 11, and 12, and anyways, this really long period, and like got my heart broken, was really sad, and was questioning my relationship with a higher power, and wasn't calling my sponsor at all. And then things started to get a little bit better. I got really involved in young people's service and was part of a couple conferences, and I'm still involved with the Young People's Committee in San Francisco. And I wasn't, you know, calling my sponsor. And so I was doing all of these other things, and they were really great. They were really helpful. And I was working with sponsees, but I wasn't necessarily doing inventory. So, and I found myself getting really, really angry. Like, I was just angry all the time. And I would cry at the drop of the hat. And I legitimately felt like everyone was out to get me, which is a really hard way to be sober, because there's no way to escape the feelings or the thoughts. And so I found this woman who I knew was, I can't say that word on stage, who, not the B word, who was really like a hard person, you know, like hard. And thank you. And so that's what I wanted. And so I asked her to sponsor me, and she just like drilled the inventory in me, just like constantly. Like every time I talked to her, she's like, well, did you do an inventory? I was like, no, you know, like, can I just talk? Because I was so used to talking to my old sponsor, and I'm making excuses, I know, but like, I just didn't want to do the inventory, and she would keep telling me, do the inventory, do the inventory, do the inventory, and I was like, fine, I will, I'll do the inventory, and I did it, you know, like, on this, like, one particular issue, and like, I felt better, and I'm like, oh, what people say in AA is right. Like, I had like six or seven years. I'm like, oh, you mean people in AA are correct in what they're talking about? And so I felt better. And she's actually got me in the habit of, before I call her, I do the inventory. And, which has worked out really well, I think, for both parties involved. And what I've noticed, because I can, you know, when I think about the spot check inventory, I'm usually really angry. And it's really hard for me to think about how I'm wrong. And so I actually need to put pen to paper. And so, because it's just really hard for me to do. And I would make these excuses when I would talk to my sponsor. And she's like, well, why don't you just, like, she has this little worksheet, and she's like, why don't you just, like, print it out and carry in the purse with you? And I'm like, darn it, that's a really good idea. And so I've been doing that, and it's been really helpful. And what I've noticed is that I have these clusters of behaviors that, like, I'm constantly working sub 6 and 7 trying to change my behavior, and I keep noticing the same freaking behaviors that keep coming up. You know, like, I always want to be this better person. I always want to try harder and, like, do higher power's will, whatever that is, and be of service. But there are just a couple of characteristics that are character defects that keep coming up. So, like, I'm really insecure. I couldn't necessarily say everything right here, what's wrong with me, but that's, like, recently the one that keeps coming up is that I'm really insecure. And so when I also think about the idea of, I really couldn't understand the concept for a really long time that if we are disturbed, something's wrong with us, because a lot of times I'm more, I am really angry, but I'm also, like, insecure, or, like, I react to these things. And so I'm trying to figure out how to say this right now, but so there's, like, this direct behavior that maybe I'm doing that's wrong. But then what I've also noticed through my inventories is that there's these indirect behaviors of, like, I'm taking things personally. And you may not know that I'm taking this personally, like, your action, but, like, I'm totally pissed at you in my head. And so that's kind of, for me, how, like, I was able to understand and relate to the idea of, like, something's wrong with us. So, like, does that make sense what I'm saying? Like, it's not this direct behavior, but it's an indirect behavior that I'm just, like, resentful and taking this poison that, like, nobody knows about except maybe my husband, because he has to hear about it all the time. So doing the inventory is really, I've been seeing the clusters of behaviors. And what's been interesting is, so I've been really involved in YPAW, and I love young people, so it's so much fun. And sometimes I notice, I'm going to focus on myself, that sometimes I focus on personalities over principles and get really angry. And so I've been able to use the inventory on these very specific things, and it's been really helpful. Like, how, because I was an officer on the committee and still an officer in another position, but I had a responsibility, and I would get really angry and, like, self-righteous, like, this is the way things need to be. And so in some situations, I needed to kind of take a step back, and I was able to see that behavior and what I needed to do by doing the inventory. So I think I was able to, provide a better service and help with the continuity of the committee. And, most recently, I graduated from undergrad, and then I graduated from graduate school about a month ago, which was really weird because I'm the first in my family to go to college. I have a lot of debt. Outside issue. I'm so used to my ego, like, I'm used to being successful, and, like, I applied for this internship in graduate school, and I'm a little overzealous, and I had, like, 15 interviews and got offered, like, 8 traineeships, and then I was like, ooh, I get to pick, like, I'm Jennifer, and I'm special, and I'm, like, really, like, egotistical, and I had a really great experience doing the internships, and then when I graduated from graduate school, like, I applied to, like, so many jobs and, like, didn't get anything for, like, a really long time. Okay, a month, but still, it felt like forever. And I'm thinking about those, like, debts that I need to pay off in the 6 months, and I'm actually accruing interest as we speak. As I speak right now, I'm accruing interest. Thank you very much for that latte. And so I was in a lot of fear, so much fear. And, like, talking to all these people about it, because the natural question that people ask after you graduate is, like, well, what are you doing now? And, like, I'm so obsessed and, like, I want everyone to, like, approve of me and think I'm this fabulous person, and I didn't have a job. And I was applying to all these jobs, and I would think that I would get these jobs, and I wouldn't get them. Like, I was for sure thinking that I was going to get them. And then I applied to this one job that I was, like, 150% sure that I was going to get, and I didn't get it, and I was really sad, and I did an inventory around my worries and fears about it, and it's what I saw is that I do, I have these expectations, right? Like, I really think that I'm going to run the show, I'm going to figure it out, and this is what I need to be doing, I need to work at this agency. And so I got to see that. And so afterwards, I continued to apply to these other jobs, really trying to lower my expectations and just try to go with the flow, you know. And I'm also on step 7 with my sponsor, and like I read out of the 12 and 12, and they talk about there's like two different ideas. There's the idea of, you know, we must have this humility, and then there's also a separate idea of like we really want this humility. So I think that like right before when I'm applying for all these jobs, I'm like, I must have this, like, you know. And then afterwards, after I did this particular inventory, I was like, I really saw how much the expectation really messed with me and messed with my emotions and my head and my serenity. And so I really tried to go with these ideas of, I'm just going to go. And like, you know, at the end of the inventory that I do, it says, what is the solution? And it's like, okay, I need to trust God and just like trust that everything's going to be okay. Like, I really believe that my higher power has these bigger, better ideas for me. And so I continued to apply for these jobs. And then I went on like 6 interviews over an 8-day period. I have a very flexible job. That's not in my field, but I have a flexible job. And while I'm at this conference, I got offered 3 different jobs. And I'm like, now I'm going to have to choose because I can't do, you know, all of them. I mean, I think I can, but but I need to be there for my family at home. So, because I've been gone a long time for graduate school. So, and the first thing that my husband said, and because I called my sponsor, and she was like, you need to remember this. Like, don't just, like, whisk away and, like, be like, oh, yeah, like, thinking that you handled this. Like, remember this moment of, like, we were talking. What was the conversation we had 3 weeks ago? You were in total fear thinking that you weren't going to get the job. Any job, like, you're never going to amount to anything, you're a complete failure, and you're just not going to be able to pay the debts ever at any point in your life and just live on the streets of San Francisco. Like, that's where my brain goes. And now look. And, like, I know that that's, like, a really great story, and, like, I'm really happy about it, you know, but it's just this goes to show of, like, when I do the inventory and it's constantly, trust God. Like, I had that, like, the idea that my brain had of the job, the last job that I didn't get, you know, it's now that I have other opportunities, like, that job doesn't look as cool. But, like, I think that my higher power in this particular situation, well, God always has, like, a better idea than I do, I think. But I'm able to kind of figure out life by doing these inventories. And I have no idea how much time I have, but another thing that I want to say is, you know, I get really, I'm the treasurer on the committee that I'm on and YPAW, and I usually help at the front door, and I get really angry, like, I'm so many things with the way people are, and like, you know, this is not how it's supposed to be. And so, in the moment, because I'm really bad at the spot check inventory, I thought, I can't wait to do an inventory on this when I get home. And it was like this really weird moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm actually looking forward to it. Like, I was so resistant to it when I first started working with my new sponsor. And like, now I find it as like a treat. Like, I know that I'm going to feel better. It's 100% guaranteed that I will feel better if I do the inventory. I might be scared of like the next action that I need to take, but I will feel better. And like, even today when I was doing the inventory and I was freaking out and really hungry, it's something about taking the pen and writing it down, because right here, I don't even have the ideas of like clarity and serenity, but something about taking the pen and putting it here, it's magic to me. I mean, you know, it's my experience and like what I'm talking about, but it's will always work. And so why not go for the best possible avenue to serenity? Because that's what I'm looking for. And I think that's what a lot of us are looking for. I'm really happy to be here. I, you know, was born and raised here and started drinking in Atlanta. And I visited my old stomping grounds and visited all of my schools. And, you know, yesterday I contacted my ex-stepmom who I haven't spoken to in 12 years because I was too busy drinking. And I had coffee with her. And, you know, I got married 9 months ago, and I have this stepdaughter who's amazing and wonderful, but she's so sweet. And I've always thought of myself as this, like, horrible, bratty stepkid. And, like, I have a reason for why I'm sharing this right now. And the first thing I said to her is I wanted to bring this up about how I thought I was this horrible kid. And she's like, no, you were a great kid. Like, you were super responsible. You did your laundry at 12. Like, I don't know if that's abnormal, but that's what, you know, she was, like, really impressed by. And she just had such a different perception than I did of myself. And so I really think that I have this misperception a lot of times. And by doing inventory, by checking in with my sponsor, doing the steps, I hope that I can keep myself in check. So I'm really happy to be here, and I hope somebody got something out of what I said. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Let's give these folks a good hand. Stand up. Hey.